This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hey, good afternoon, world. It's Carm Capriotto, Aftermarket Weekly. We do this each and every week, 151 weeks going strong. Could you believe that? Every once in a while, I think about the 800 remarkable results, the 380 Town Hall Academies, the 151 Aftermarket Weeklies, and I still show up every week for every show. Huh? Imagine that.
You're amazing, man. You have created quite the name for yourself in the industry, Carm. As a friend of yours, as a colleague, I'm very, very proud of what you've done and what you've done to help our industry for sure. So,
well, thank you.
Looking at that picture you have, I think that's probably when we met, the picture you showed. I'm like, I'm a little older then.
I think you're still dyeing your hair now, aren't you?
Nope. This is all natural. So you remember the very first time that I interviewed with you, you know, I confessed I was that redheaded freckle-faced kid that most of you guys all picked on. So
the really neat thing about Greg is he's humble and vulnerable. I mean, you told the story of, you know, your pathway to where the hell you had to get. Weren't we riding on the bus at the summit in Cancun to the boat ride that we went on? And I think you kept telling more and more of your story. I think I heard more than I ever expected to hear, but I think it's great.
To protect the innocent and the guilty, right? Some names have to be changed, but
yeah.
My mother-in-law, who I was friends with before, and that's how I met my current wife, Elena, every year she goes, number one, you know, it's a miracle that you did not have to file personal and business bankruptcy, right? As I went through the divorce, and this is going back, you know, 19-ish years ago. And every year she's like, look at your life now, Greg. Look at your life now, Greg. Not just, you know, hey, look at how much better Elena's made your life, but look at your life now, right? What's God's done over the last almost 20 years since all that took place. But yeah, pretty crazy story. That's for sure.
I did my first very personal episode, I think it was November now, and I adopted my son and my daughter from South Korea. Now that Tracy joined the company, we've been out for 2 years, and one of the coolest things happened at your summit. The episode had been already out, and someone came up to me and said, I married an adopted South Korean. You probably know who that is. You know who that is, right?
I do.
And if we didn't tell that story, that wouldn't have happened. And there is more and more stuff coming out. And Tracy convinced me, Dad, you've been in this industry 40 some years. You've got a interesting and storied background of all the things that you've done. And people say, how's this podcasting thing happen? Tracy went on a podcast with Kim Walker the other day, and she says, many people don't know this, but my dad was on Buffalo Radio, and he met my mom while he was DJing at a club. And so she says, he's pretty comfortable behind a microphone. I never connected that to what I'm doing now. And I don't think it's that I'm comfortable behind the microphone as much as I have this giving nature about myself and wanting to make people better. And this is my little bully pulpit, if you will, Greg. Listen, you talk about coming on the show, 16 episodes I counted, you've been on the podcast. And I have some other stuff to talk about, but before we go any further, we're coming to you from the Dorman OE Fix Studios. And sometimes I call that my Carm Cave. Dorman Products creates hundreds of new automotive replacement products every month. Part of what makes Dorman so unique is their ideation of new and innovative products. They have dedicated teams all across the U.S., Mexico, and Canada looking for new product ideas. Since every solution starts with a problem, these teams of researchers, field analysts, product specialists, and contributors consistently visit repair shops and make field calls. Now, this is to best understand the problems the industry is facing. In certain cases, Dorman will manufacture aftermarket replacements so you aren't forced to go back to the OE. Other times, experts take it an additional step, further solving what made the original part problematic in the first place. Solving for a problem is what powers the innovation engine at Dorman. Dorman Products has become an incredible engine for innovation. They are constantly bringing new replacement parts to the automotive industry, and they routinely release tens of thousands of parts across all different categories. Now, why did they do all of this? To enable technicians the freedom to fix their customers' cars and trucks. To do this, Dorman has dedicated teams focused on different aspects of the vehicle to ensure that they are meeting the needs of the aftermarket. Although a lot of their parts are reverse engineering of original equipment, they also redesign and redefine solutions such as their loaded knuckles or programmable electronic power steering rack. Dorman has invested in these OE Fix innovations to help you save time, your customer money, and prevent vehicles from coming back to your shop. In certain cases, Dorman will manufacture aftermarket replacements so you aren't forced to go back to the OE. Hey, want to know more about Dorman? Visit DormanProducts.com/tour. As always, thank you, Dorman, for your great support. Well, Greg, I want to talk about the summit that you had in last couple of days of November, December of 2022 in Cancun. Thank you so much for having us down there. We walked away with a ton of episodes, including John DeJulius.
Amazing time we had together.
We had so much fun, and I had interviewed John DeJulius before, and I don't know, did you hear the story that Fernando told? I was looking around for John DeJulius, and I couldn't find him. He has a different set of glasses, he had a beard, and he was a whole lot shorter than I ever expected him to be, right?
Right. Carm, it's interesting, right, that when I'm speaking and I'm at Vision or SDX or one of the big industry events, and I'm on stage, and I say, how many people got in this business to become millionaires, right? And of course, nobody raises their hand, even if they actually did, right? But I have yet to meet somebody that like truly like, you know what, I'm going to get into this industry because I want to make a whole lot of money. It's because two reasons. We love cars and we love people. We love taking care of people. We love solving problems, right? That is the heartbeat of the automotive repair industry and the heartbeat of a lot of owners that I meet. And I say this with all sincerity, not that we don't have our bad apples, but I would say for the most part, automotive repair shops and people that have chosen the automotive repair industry are the salt of the earth. I mean, some of the greatest human beings are in our industry. And so I got to give Fernando credit when he put together that community event where we put together bicycles, that team building event that really was a community event. And I don't want to say give back because we didn't take anything, but we served the community down here in Mexico with building bicycles for those kids and providing them a way to go to school and providing them with an opportunity and then raising some money. I have got more positive feedback from vendors and our clients about what a powerful event that was. So it's the heartbeat of our industry, right? And you see so many of these shops, as soon as they're able to, what are they doing? They're fixing cars for single moms. They're just doing things for their communities out of the abundance of their success. And that's truly at the heartbeat of Transformers too, is why I want to see the industry do well, is because, man, we have a lot to offer. And the more we do that, and it's a little bit selfish, but we're taking the black eye off the industry when we do that. So we're reflecting on, we had great speakers, we had great content, we had just the networking and everything that came out of that, not to forget how powerful that team building ended up being. And that was, we didn't plan it that way. That was really, really organic. So thanks for being a part of that.
By the way, I'm trying to hook up with Fernando and bring that, a couple of the couples, and do a podcast episode on the whole bike thing and the couple from Canada that laid out that big money for that scholarship. To your point, more and more people that I know in the industry write to me and says, hey, we're doing this in the community. Would this make an episode that would help challenge the rest of the industry to take it up another level? And we're hearing so much about automotive repair, that they're doing in these non-for-profit groups, Greg, that are springing up everywhere to help people. You want to work, you need transportation. Yeah, that was great. An interesting thing about John DeJulius was, I want to bring it into the networking sphere. When you go to a conference, like you had the Transformers Summit, first of all, everyone who's there appreciates you and the strategy behind why Transformers Institute started. I mean, it's truly a love network, if you will, where everybody wants to help everyone else. But you go to a place like Vision, 30-some% were new. So what do you do when you go there? Person sitting next to you, you got to introduce yourself. You got to bring business card and you got to start talking things up, because I do believe in the 6 degrees of separation. Somebody knows somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody that knows you.
Absolutely.
I find that to be one of the biggest takeaways that I've ever had when I've ever attended conferences. Well, we're done with John DeJulius and we're just shooting the breeze. He's from Cleveland. I'm from Buffalo. And who would have thought that he goes every summer to this place on Chautauqua Lake and the place that Tracy's getting married in September? So just because we were shooting the breeze about, hey, how far is Chautauqua from where you guys are? And he goes, we go to the Anthoneum Memorial Day weekend. And Tracy just goes crazy knowing that that's where she's getting married. But anyway, it's the power of networking. It's the power of just not shaking a hand. It's the power to look someone in the eye and say, hey, what are you taking away from this conference? I want to know a couple of things in this episode, catching up with Greg Bunch. What do you see as the biggest struggle, Greg, among non-performing shop owners? What's their one or two top struggles?
That's a great question. It's even the top shops are struggling with it. And it seems pretty basic. But over the last 2 years, we have absolutely seen this interesting scenario in our industry that I don't know, fairly unprecedented, right? Where people stopped buying new cars, used cars were astronomical. As people got back in the road after COVID, right? It's like they weren't out buying new cars. They're keeping their old cars or bringing project cars out of the woodworks. And one of the services that we do for our clients is we listen to about 50 phone calls. We have a QA program that we offer. Then we catalog those and we score them accordingly. It's a pretty cool program. You got to get Jason online to talk to you about that. But long story short, was like he would tell me the micro trends that are going on. Like, hey, right now, if you can get somebody in your shop, you have business. Right. It's just, can I get in? Well, and then as we had the ebbs and flows of last year and the ups and downs and the war starting and all that, it became like, well, how much? Can I get in? How much? Right. So back and forth. Well, as this New Year's unfolded, it's like getting people like, man, my car count has dropped. And Jason's like been screaming from the rooftops behind me going, hey, you guys got lazy on your phone calls. Right? You're just expecting everybody, you know, like you're doing them a favor to work on their car instead of appreciating the fact that they picked up the phone and they may choose you to work on their giving opportunity to earn their business. So what we're seeing on the telephone and being able to get somebody off the phone and into the shop, like that is becoming more and more critical to everybody's survival. And it goes back to what John DeJulia said, right? That is the first part of your customer experience. Is you can have a beautiful website, you can have a beautiful shop, you can have all that, and you get some guy that's or gal that's indifferent, that's rude, that's chewing their hamburger, that, well, it's $75, bring it in whether you want to or not. Like, just that attitude is not going to work. You know, so going back to your original question, what are the challenges? People are definitely feeling like car counts are dropping back to 2018-19 numbers, which weren't bad. I mean, but it wasn't what it was during this boom over the last couple of years. And we all need to work harder on our customer service. And that starts right there on the telephone. So a long answer to a short question, Karn, but definitely if I could give anybody advice is make sure you're doing good on your phone.
Yeah. And that's my big takeaway from what you just said. I wrote down the word art and science. And to me, you can get a service advisor to feel very good in their bones, have some empathy, which could be the art part. Then there is a scientific way to communicate with them, answer their questions, keep them in charge of the call, but yet you are, and then get them to come in and trust you. I mean, come on, isn't it the biggest thing? And let us be your Google. I've been saying that for so long. Let us be your Google. Bring it in.
Love it. You know, what's Shark Tank, right? The guy, he's like, stop the madness, right? Yeah. I was trying to find the video clip to give to Jason in his class because that's what we say. You know, when the madness is some guy has a check engine light and he's picking up the phone. He's new to town. He's just moved there. He Googled it. Okay, this shop looks pretty good. I'm going to call them. Oh, they said it was this much. I'm going to call it, right? And it's just like, if you can stop the madness, like, and almost being getting them to go to realize the way they're going about trying to find a shop, you can end all the madness right now and just say, you can win them over, right? Build that rapport, build that relationship, stop them from smiling and dialing and trying to find the cheapest place to get their check engine diagnosed, tell them the value, find out a little bit more about them, right? The four that John talked about. And get them in the shop. And that's what I call stop the madness. You know, keep them from calling 15 other people and getting more confused about our industry than ever.
Going back to John DeJulius, of course, Ford is family, occupation, recreation, and dreams. And wanting to keep that inside of your CRM system or just in your client's account so that when they come back in, you can follow all the great things that you've learned from them. I loved it. One of the biggest takeaways with John, and I've interviewed him twice, thanks to you the second time, he talked about owning a salon. And if somebody comes in and says, I have this really neat challenge and I want my hair to look like this. And he says, well, we got to give you to a number 10. Oh, what's the name of the hairdresser? We got to give you to a number 10 level upside the head about our industry. ABC technician. We need to have level 10 technicians or level 10 R&R people. Just as a crazy thought. And you know, it all came from the hairdresser business that he has. And one of the things that he was talking about is that the shop down the road does this same haircut for $9.95. And he says, look at the sign in the window. We fix $9.95 haircuts. That applies to us.
I was reading today, right? There's a survey that was sent out by one of the marketing companies, and it was great. They interviewed like 10,000 consumers of automotive repair. And one thing that stood out is pretty much from a survey that AAA did, I think in 2006, right? What are people scared about auto repair, right? That they're going to get overcharged, be sold something they don't need, right? Everything that we hear all the time. Well, the one extra thing that is now on the 2022 survey that wasn't on the 2006 that people are saying they want someone to be nice to them. Think about that.
That's a total shame.
Now, a lot of shop owners listen to this going, well, my people are nice. I dare you to listen to 30 phone calls and say, were they really as nice as you think they are? Right. Well, I walked by and they were really nice to Ms. Jones because you walked by. It's tough, right? When you're dealing with the general public and you're getting abused per se because, you know, people are taking their stress out on you. It's easy to take that and parlay that into the next customer. Okay, now what? Now what are these guys going to yell at me about? My hat's off, right? I mean, service advising is a tough job. You're the face of the company and you're dealing with people that don't want to be there, that are having some kind of stress and adversity in their life. More than ever, they need that empathy that you're talking about. They need someone to be nice to them.
Yeah, you know, Jason Servideo is your guy, your service advisor. I've done it on the show. I've actually seen him teach here in Buffalo. And when I think about, here I'm a service advisor, my owner comes to me and says, listen, we're going to start recording the calls. We got this really neat new fangled telephone system and somebody's going to reach out to you or I will reach out to you and we're going to talk about and listen to this stuff and see if we can groom you like an actor. We got to make you be a better at your craft. Do they feel like, oh my God, I can't believe it. You're kind of invading my space. Or do they look at it as, wow, I can get better. This is great. I never thought I could just hear myself, listen to myself and improve. What's it like?
Man, you're hitting the nerve, Carm. You must have been in on a conversation I had with a district manager this morning talking about that. It's like, you know, I've only got one service advisor that's really comfortable listening to her own telephone calls. The other ones are real squirmish, man. They don't want to do it. They don't want to role play. That's like, think about sports, right? And I said, what? And I'm not a sports guy. People will make fun of me. And I play along with it, you know, about, you know, scoring a touchdown on the baseball field or whatever. I really do know enough to be dangerous. But what happens, right? They go back and what do they watch? Whether they won or lost, they watch the tapes. Right? What happened? What happened during that play? What could we have done better? Did you see that guy coming on your flank? Whatever it is. And right, we talk about coaching, right? That what is it? That's what the coach does. They're trying to fine tune your craft. And then you've got service advisors that like, just leave me alone. I don't want to hear that. I don't want to be tuned up. I'm doing just fine. And I don't care from, I've got a business coach. You've had coaching for what you do. You and I talked about that. So if I'm a singer, I got a voice coach. Hockey player, I got a hockey coach. If I've, whatever it is in life that, man, why on earth wouldn't you want to be the best you could be at whatever you are at that time? And so I have a real problem that, and one of my core values, both at Transformers and at Aspen Auto Clinic, is you have to be a lifelong learner. And when I figure out that somebody's not into that, like it's not a good DNA fit. And, you know, I want people that want to be kick butt and take names at their position, whatever it is. Technician, GS, manager, service advisor. They want to hone their craft. They want to get better.
The new frontier, service advisor training to the nines. I mean, we're not just talking about doing role plays or just going out and listening to a sage on the stage talking to you about how you could get better. It's the hook, I call it. The hook of listening to the calls and improving upon what you know you could have done better. And someone who doesn't want to play in that ball game is running on autopilot, I think.
Our industry has a lot of that, right? It's the guy that was a good technician, his back gave out, his knees gave out. Hey, he knows a lot about cars. Let's put him out front. And we lovingly call the crusty old guys, right? That, yeah, they can tell you about circuitry in a car better than anybody else. But, you know, most people, that's not what they're interested. They want how much, how long. They want someone to be nice to them and it was taken care of. So yeah, it's that the world is changing and the people that get it are going to do really, really well. And the people that don't are going to be like, what the heck happened? The other thing I want to bring up, you know, I read this survey this morning. I'm going to talk to our mastermind. We have a Zoom meeting tomorrow as part of this discussion. I teach all the time. What is the biggest threat? What are things coming? You're the CEO of the company, right? A good CEO is looking long into the future to find out what's going to happen in our industry. And I know that you have people that jump on and we talk about self-driving cars, talk about electric cars and all those kind of things. Well, to me, those are out there. Those are still to me on the fringe. Like I want to know what's even closer of a threat to what we're doing. And basically it was came out in the Lang report that by 2030, internal combustion engines on the road will be down by 15% in 2030. Well, why? Because the cars that are not getting sold today are going to be our sweet spot for the aftermarket repair family in 2030. Well, they're not selling right now, right? And we saw during 2008, we saw this big bubble of new cars not being sold. And then all of a sudden everybody fixed their used cars, right? Similar to what we've seen. And then then as people said, enough is enough. I got 250,000 miles on this thing. I'm going to trade it in. Now they're all driving new cars and all the shop owners going, what did we do wrong? We're calling our customers. Hey, what did we do wrong? Nothing. I just bought a new car, right? The economy's healthier. And so, you know, this car count ebb and flow, and we need to be prepared for it, right? Somebody is looking at that data and is thinking about that, telling us, hey, by 2029, 2030, you better be prepared that your car count's going to, the nationwide car count's going to drop. Okay. So then what do we do about that? How do we make sure that our car count doesn't drop when that happens in the nation?
We've done a lot of shows in the last month on the future of our industry. What do we have to do to prepare? To a point, there are a lot of answers to that, depending on your position, your marketplace. But someone taught me many, many years ago and said, he put their arm around me, a mentor of mine put his arm around me and said, pay attention. I'm telling you, if there's any better thing I could tell you, just don't stick your head in the ground. Be up, be alert, pay attention. And if we do that, I think we can just about handle anything that comes to us. And you're a lifelong learner. I call it being a perpetual student. That's something that hit me like 25 years ago. Somebody says, well, what's different and unique about you? I said, I love to learn. I'm a perpetual student. And it went, bing. That's my phrase. Hey, talk to me. People want to hire a coach. Give me an idea of what does it take that individual? Why do they hire them? Why do they finally pick up the phone and call Greg Bunch, one of your people, and say, I'm in? Do you ask them why?
Absolutely. And there's a lot of different reasons, right? That I think for us, and I think we're a little bit different in the industry because we do help a lot of people grow their multi-store organizations. And we have coaches that specialize in that because that's a different animal. Not that we don't get, you know, the shop owner that says, hey, I'm really struggling here or there, or most of our work comes from referrals. And so, hey, I know you helped my friend Patrick. And he's kicking butt and taking names and said, I need to talk to you. So, but usually there's a pain point, right? And something, there's a blockage. There's one of our clients I love. He said, look, I'm willing to pay the stupid tax or the idiot tax, meaning that I know you guys have gotten your butt kicked on all this stuff, especially going multi-store. And I want to learn from you what not to do and how to do this right and skip all the pain and suffering that you guys went through. So yeah, and I think to really hone in on that question, Carm, it's people that do want to get better. They know that things are changing. They know that they need some level of accountability. They know they need some training. They know they need peer support, just like anybody that would want to do well in whatever endeavor they're in life. And so it's not for everybody. And it's sad when you get people to sign up and say, hey, I want to do all this. And then week after week after week, nothing changes. They don't follow and they will tell you what they need to do. Carm, I had a conversation today. Carm, I know I need to let this guy go. I know that I hold on to people too long. I said, that's not something to brag about. I hate firing people. I churn my stomach and I do everything to avoid it and what to do. But at the end of the day, sometimes that's the right answer. And it's doing the company a favor and you're not doing the person a favor by waiting one more day, right? You're just prolonging the inevitable. So talking through things like that. And of course, it's easy for the coach to say, hey, that person needs to go because we don't have a personal relationship, right? And so sometimes it's that level of accountability of what needs to be done. I had another client that I said, look, man, you take a lot of money out of this business. And they want to grow. And it was like, do you really need that much money to live off of? Or can we put some money, right? Can we put some money aside of what you're spending personally to make sure we've got a good solid nest egg here? Because as you know, more businesses fail, not because of lack of profit, but lack of cash flow. And when you're growing, stuff happens. Stuff, you know, it's the old adage, it's going to cost you twice as much and take twice as long. So you better be prepared.
I'm going to sell my business. Okay. Somebody's willing to step up and pay for your cash flow. What? What do you mean? I take all kinds of money out of my business. I don't show anything. Oh, well, that's going to hurt. Who runs the business? Are you a micromanager? Yes. I said, well, second strike. And so you bring up the word cash flow, which is so important. At the end of the day, and I don't think many people understand that, but the person who wants to step up to pay for your business and say pay for it in 5 years has to pay for it from the profit of the business, which is the cash it generates. And I think sooner or later, when people finally get that, they don't look around and say, oh, I got all my lists. I got $100,000 worth of equipment. No, Craigslist will give you 20 for it, right? If push comes to shove and you liquidate, right?
So I did an acquisitions class here at Vision right, a month ago, whatever it was, it's flown by. Well, the number one question that people come up and ask afterwards is, hey, I've been talking to this guy and he wants $1 million. And right, that's the joke, right? $1 million, that's what everybody wants for the shop. How do I tell him that I'm only willing to pay $250 because it's worn out equipment, he doesn't make any money, He works in the business every day. And so it's like, yeah, you're, you know, the art, and I should write this book, right? The art of telling somebody their baby's ugly, like, because that's what you have to do. And unless it's really an extreme circumstance where they just have a Walgreens location and you can make something of it. Yeah. Those conversations are happening all the time. And it's not good, but these older shop owners have brought it on themselves by not building a sellable business. They've created a great job. And if they want to sell it to one of their technicians or their manager, advisor that also wants a great job, more power to them. But if you want a real multiplier and you want it to sell your business, right, you got to get those things fixed. It's a lot of work. And people just say, I want off. So I have certainly seen people go from $1 million to 350 to 300,000 once they realize, hey, just like you said, if I pay you all this money, I have nothing left over. So why on earth would I buy your business?
When you and I talk, it's amazing. You just spike so much stuff in me. And you said $1 million. And I've done shows on this. And we've heard people, please, when they say they want $1 million for your business, do not drop on the floor, roll over because you're laughing so hard because you can't even stand up. Please have a straight face and say, okay, here's what we're going to do. Going to got some yellow pads. I'm going to see your profit and loss statements for the last 3 years, at least minimum 3 years. And I'm going to take that stuff back. It'll include discussing with your people, look at your marketing efforts, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I'll get back to you and I'll let you know based on what the numbers say, we can have a viable return on any investment that I would give you. And if $1 million, if we discover it's $1 million, I'll pay you $1 million. He's told his wife or his spouse, baby, this is our nest day. We got $1 million sitting here, hon. And to your point about being at a Walgreens location, maybe that's where the value is in the property. And there's so many different ways. Greg, you know that, God, you've been involved in so many deals. But I want to have people wake up and say, you don't have $1 million business if you don't have this, this, and this. So start. And then been asking coaches of late, how long do you think it takes for someone to finally say, I'm the problem. I need to fix this. I really would love to be paid for all my years of working. And then I would ask coaches, does it take 3 years with a really honestly signed on accountable person? Or is it five? The answers are all over the place. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. And there's some people that, you know, let's say that once that realization hits, like, I don't have another 3 or 5 years in me to do this. I will sell it for not scrap, but you know what I'm saying? They'll come way down on their price and do something different. So yeah, it's an interesting, and we started talking about this when I read that study. I think Motor Age Magazine, that they said by 2020, 53% of mom and pop shop owners went out of the business. Well, they didn't know COVID was going to hit in 2020. And over COVID, we did lose at least 6,000 shops. I was told the number was even higher than that just recently. However, a lot of those people, they had to hold on because they literally had no choice. They can't afford to retire. And they don't have anybody that's willing to step in and pay enough money to them to be able to retire. So they're stuck.
So one final question. At Vision, of course, I think you did one class, right, on succession?
Yeah, I did. No, not on succession. We did one on successful acquisitions. I did one building the apprentice program and then one on your financial statements, profit and loss. So 3 different classes.
I love to find out, what do people come up to the trainer at the end and talk to you about? I mean, to me, the big takeaway is, did you get through? What else do they want to know?
Absolutely. So on the acquisitions class, one of my coaches, Troy Kaplan, who recently sold 24, 25 locations. So he's come on board as one of my coaches helping people do acquisitions. We put a special class together and help grow their business. And so there was a lot of communication about financing and about real estate, about sourcing deals. I mean, we had 4 hours and we really needed 8 hours. We didn't even get to everything that we wanted to, and a lot of the next generation, right? The 30 to 45 year old shop owner coming up and asking those questions. So that was really cool. And I do see, that's a whole nother podcast, but right, talking about what's happening with consolidation in the industry and what that's going to look like. On the financial class, really the biggest takeaway, I think, that people, they brought up to me was the fact that I could tie in literally, as we talked earlier on this, how do you answer the phone? How does that parlay into your financial statement? That affects the marketing, that affects your service advisor pay, all of those things. You have the owner looking at the P&L and the people down answering the phone. How do we tie those two things together? And how do those behaviors relate to that? And then, of course, the apprentice program was a big thing. And what I told him, I said, look, somebody's going to be offended because I'm not going to hand you a binder with an apprentice program. I'm sorry, right? I'm not here to give you the fish. I'm here to teach you how to fish. And so we talked a lot about leadership styles. We talked a lot about learning techniques and the way people learn. learn and how to pick not only the student, right, to bring in. And when I talk apprentice, I'm just not talking technicians, I'm talking advisors, anybody that you're going to bring in, is your business has to be ready for that. And then the trainer has to be ready for that. And the trainer has to have curriculum that's ready for that. And then we go out and we try and find the right person that's going to fit what you're looking for within the organization. So I think people appreciate it a different angle than just here, you pay the technician this to train this. And right, everybody's heard all that. That information is all readily available. But let's get under the hood and let's talk about what this Generation Z guys and gals are all about and what do they want in their career, right? It's different than the Gen Xers. It's different than the baby boomers. How do we work with millennials? Well, now you better figure out how to work with Gen Zs, and it's not the same as working with millennials. So we had some good conversations around that as well. And I had a framework of what I wanted to put together, but the more research that I did, I learned a lot by putting that class together and going, wow, these Gen Zs are our future and they're not going to change for us. We better work on changing for them.
Thank you so much for this brilliant stuff. Transformers Institute, Greg Bunch, and of course, Aspen Auto Clinic, 6 locations. Let me see, Colorado Springs Monument in Centennial, Colorado.
Can I throw a plug in there that Jason is going to be in Colorado in May teaching a service advisor class? I think there's 4 openings left. So
great.
It's on our website.
He's a great guy, great trainer. I've watched him. In fact, some of the shop owners that have been to his, I said, so how'd the training go with Jason? He says, I made all my money back 3 days later. Duh. Perpetual Studency. And again, training is a strategic pillar in a business. And I've been preaching that an awful lot. We can't forget about the importance of that. And every position in the company has to have a critical number of hours each and every year. So, boy, this was fun, my friend. Thank you so much for being here, Greg Bunch, and we'll all see you next week on Aftermarket Weekly.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Carm.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.